Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
It's the new year.
Happy new year, friend. How are you?
I'm okay. We made it.
5th of January.
Yeah, and hopefully this year is not going to be the same as last.
I feel really positive. I'm ready to get going, get cracking with it. I feel like I'm happy that the sort of festive period is out the way. I've got my New Year's resolutions in my hand and I'm ready to go for it. And like the vaccine's being rolled out everywhere. I think we're in good shape.
Yeah, me too. My granddad has had the vaccine.
Has he?
Yes, I know. And you know what? Last year, I spoke about it on, you know, a couple of podcasts just before Christmas, but we lost my nan last year. It's been an awful year for him. His house burnt down during lockdown.
I've got to remember that.
Yeah, so he moved into a flat on his own and he's been isolated, you know. He's not had his neighbours, doesn't know anyone that he lives near. The only person he'd seen for like the whole year pretty much has been my mum, you know, me a couple of times when I've gone to the garden, but like really not at all. And this is going to change everything for him. You know, he's 81 and he can go to the shops and do those sorts of things, which he's been so desperate to do.
Oh.
And I'm just so pleased for, you know, people like him that, yeah, if they did get it, it would be quite, you know, it would be bad.
That's lovely news to start the new year.
Yeah, it is. I'm just really excited for him to get out and about and do stuff. So, yes, and I'm so ready to get cracking with work. I'm pumped.
I love this. Did you guys survive Christmas Day without an argument?
Yes, we did, but we try and avoid each other on Christmas Day.
You float like, past one another next to the pigs in blankets.
I just put my glass out and I'm like, just top it up and don't.
I love that. Anything. I love that.
How about you?
I love where your head's at. Yeah, I'm good. I've had a nice break. It was lovely to, obviously we were still podcasting, but it was nice to have a couple of weeks off socials and spend some time with the family and just, yeah, I'm just really, really excited about this year. I think both you and I are in the same headspace. It's amazing what a bit of a social media break can do for you. And you just feel ready to rock and roll. So let's get on with it. And what a podcast we are starting off with this year. This lady she's somebody that's been in our ears and on our screens for a very long time. In fact, she grew up in a pop group and then joined the Saturdays when she was really, really young. What I love most about this incredible lady is how vocal she's been about her mental health, her anxiety, all of her struggles. And she's got a fantastic podcast, Open Mind, that I've been a guest on, which was lovely. So yeah, we recorded this podcast back in December, but who are we chatting to today?
Today, we are so excited because we are chatting to Frankie Bridge.
Oh, this is another real pinch me moment because we absolutely love this woman and we've been trying to pin her down. Lockdown's gone in our favour again this time. Singer, dancer, writer, podcaster. She's a mum of two, basically a superwoman in our eyes. Today's guest is Frankie Bridge. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I think that's the nicest welcome I've ever had.
Oh, Zoe's good at that. You are good at that, Zoe. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, just, you know, cracking on like everybody else, I suppose.
Yeah, we're recording this while we're still in lockdown. We've only got a few days to go, 10 days to go.
10 days to go.
What's the first thing you're going to do?
Oh, God. I don't even know what it is that I miss the most. For me, it's just like, I don't like not having options. I I think just see my friends, however many I'm allowed to see, I will see. I don't know what the new numbers are, but I will see them because I just miss, yes, we can FaceTime and we can text and all that stuff, but I just miss seeing their faces and laughing with them, you know?
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? Because it goes against all of our natural human instincts, this. Obviously, we know why we're doing it and we're respecting the rules and everything like that. But what you really want to do is like give your best mate a hug. And that's really hard when you're not allowed to do that. I find that difficult.
I think it's weird. And also, I think because people are struggling, and you know, where you'd normally be like, oh, pop over or we'll pop out or whatever, we'll do something or we'll catch up with the girls and we'll have a laugh and, you know, it will help. We can't do that right now. So, it's weird. And I think we don't really even know what we're going into or how long it's going to last. And I think that's the hardest part. I think at the beginning, we were all kind of a bit like, all right, this is all right, we can do this. This is gonna last a couple of weeks. And now we're all a bit like, oh, okay, it's probably gonna go into 21, and it's just odd, but I'm hoping one day we will look back and go, oh, I remember that time where Corona was a big deal and now it's not.
We can see anyone or hug anyone.
Frankie, we obviously, a parenting podcast, we love talking about motherhood and parenting, but I wanted to ask you to kind of cast your mind back to your days in the Saturdays, to tell us about that journey, how you got into the band and what those years were like when you were singing and performing all the time.
You know what? It was really random how I got into the band. So I was in a band called Desk Club Juniors when I was 12.
We know that. We love that.
For the people that don't. So I was in a band when I was really young. And I had this, like, when that finished, I had this, like, weird period in between where I kind of went solo for a bit. I never released anything. Just kind of, I think for about a year, did some recording. Nothing ever really felt right. And then I just kind of like bummed around a bit with my mates. And then I worked in Sugar Hut. I don't know if you've ever watched the Anyways Essex.
You know what? I live in Brentwood and that is up the road from me. Yes. And I know it very well.
So I worked in there before it was like on the Anyways Essex. So I worked behind the bar for a bit and then I worked in All Saints in Lakeside. And so I had like normal jobs, as I would call them, I suppose. And then all my friends started to go to uni and I was a bit like, well, what am I going to do? Like, what happens for me now? Because I was only about 16. Mm-hmm. And then I was in Zante on my first like friend holiday. It was just me and my mate and you know, I'd been a bit sheltered. So I kind of just found this hotel. It looked all right. Everyone else seemed to be going away. And I was like, oh, should we just go here? So me and my mate went and it was a terrible holiday. Very much opened my eyes as to what I'd been missing out on in my teenage years. And I got a phone call while I was on the beach from a guy who worked at the record label for S Club Juniors. And he was like, look, we're putting together a band. We're thinking you might be right for it. Do you want to come and see us and talk about it? And I was like, on the beach in Zante, like, okay. So when I got back, I went to meet them and they were like, well, you can be in the band if you want. And I kind of left, two of my mates had come up with me into London and they were like, oh, so what, how was it? What happened? And I was like, I think I'm in a girl band. They were like, what do you mean you think you're in a girl band? And I was like, I'm just one of those people, I don't ask enough questions. So I was like, well, I think I am. And then that was it. Yeah, like me and like I think it was eight other girls at a time did loads of like singing and dancing together. They were kind of trying to whittle us down to five. There was five of us, wasn't it? Yeah, it's five of us.
There's five, yeah, definitely five.
Yeah, there was five. And yeah, so it was weird. That was a really long-winded story. But yeah, it was just really random. And I was a bit like unsure about going into another band and I was a bit nervous, but then also equally, I was like, what else are you going to do, Frank? This is all you know.
Yeah. I guess you mentioned that you missed out on a few things like in your teenage years, like because you was in a band and doing different stuff.
Mm.
And obviously Wayne didn't have a normal job either.
No.
Is it something that you would steer your boys away from or would you like them to have a similar experience to both of you?
You know what? It's really difficult. I feel like I change my mind all the time. And even down to like the educational system, like Wayne and I didn't really, well, Wayne did have a normal education. I didn't, because I basically left school when I was 12 and we were like tutored while we were on the road. So I would do like my schoolwork on a tour bus, or when we were in Barcelona filming a TV show, I would go in, do scenes and come and sit down and do my maths GCSE work. Like, it's mad. And I look at my kids sometimes and I do sometimes feel like if you don't fit in a particular box, or you don't learn or get to the levels that you're supposed to get to by certain terms and the same as everyone else, then they don't really know what to do with you. And I do sometimes worry about that with my kids, and our kids are lucky enough to go to private school. But Wayne and I found that really hard to choose where to go, because, well, one, neither of us went to private school, and two, Wayne, everyone Wayne knows, left school early and then have become successful for many different reasons, as businessmen or as sportsmen. So for him, education doesn't seem that important. But I think for me, where I wasn't there all the time, even though all my friends from school, all my friends are still all my mates from school, I really want my kids to have that time to be kids and to enjoy that and to finish that. Equally, if something was to come up and they wanted to do something, I would never stop them, because my parents didn't stop me. And yes, it came with its lows, but I wouldn't be where I am today without that decision that they made. So I don't know, it's really difficult. But I suppose what I'm saying is I would support them either way. But I mean, if they wanted to become a doctor or something, I'd be well up for that.
Absolutely.
I think they've got the best of both worlds, really, because I think, like you said, you're encouraging them to do whatever they love. And I think when we were at school, it was more like, you know, you need to be really, really good at maths and science. And I was like, but I don't understand maths and science. I'm English and I'm drama and I'm sport, and that's what I want to do. And for ages, they were trying to ram me in this like square peg, and I didn't want to go in at all. So it was really hard for me to break away from that. In a way, I think our kids are really lucky to be in the world that they're in, because there are so many more options for them and so many more creative outlets for them if they don't necessarily fit like the science bill.
100%. And I think mine and Wayne's biggest thing, like you said, is we just want them to do something that makes them happy. And neither of us came from pushy parents. So like my parents, I went to a normal dance school in like the local school hall or whatever, like council hall. And the teacher actually said to my mum and dad, oh, I think you should send her to stage school. And they were like, really? They were like, Frank, you want to go stage school? and then like the first time they heard me sing properly was like on stage at stage school. So they weren't pushy. They had no idea. And Wayne didn't really start playing football till he was 7, and he got scouted and he decided not to go and do the tryout. Like, and his mum and dad didn't force him to do it. So we kind of will go down that route, I think, although I think it would be quite hard if they're really good at something.
You've talked a lot about your anxiety, really, really openly, really bravely. Do you think, well, firstly, were your levels of anxiety sort of rising during the band, and when did you really realize that you had a bit of a problem here?
I always say I came out of the womb anxious. I think my personality is just more in that direction. When I was younger, I was a really deep thinker, and I did always really worry about everyone even then. And I think just being in the position I ended up in, being in two bands, and I think less S Club Juniors, because I was so young and I didn't really understand, and there was no social media. No one was allowed to write about us in the papers, and I was kind of just enjoying myself. Whereas I think when you get older, like in the Saturdays, I was one, aware that, you know, my career had a short, lifespan. I too knew I needed to earn a living, like as you get older, obviously. When I was younger, that was irrelevant. And also there was that pressure that I put on myself to stay successful, and also social media and the media writing about you and stuff. So my anxiety definitely got worse. And I think I just always had this real guilt that I knew I was lucky. I knew I was in an amazing position, but I just had this deep level of unhappiness. And I didn't really understand it. And I think the guilt is what caused most of my anxiety, to be honest.
The guilt about what?
And just knowing that I had everything I wanted. I'd worked hard to get to where I was, but I knew that there was lots of people out there that would love to have been in my position. And yet I wasn't 100% happy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until I met Wayne and realized that, I know it sounds weird, that I was happy with him, that I realized that my unhappiness was deep rooted and was something else.
Yeah. So it was when you got together with Wayne that you realized that there was an issue.
Yeah, I think I'd suffered for a long time before that. In my previous relationship, I was kind of like, I was crying a lot. I was kind of coming home from work, not eating dinner, going straight to bed. I was kind of only able to function at work. And then when I first met Wayne, it was almost like the honeymoon period, that kind of disappeared. And then once I got a bit more comfortable, that kind of began again. It was like I could switch on at work, be everything I needed to be, and then the minute I was at home, it was like I couldn't keep it up anymore. And that was when I realized that I couldn't really go on with my life like that, really.
Yeah. Were you also suffering from an eating disorder? You said you were coming home and not eating dinner, and we've spoken about this, haven't we, Frankie, on your podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that was tiredness as well, like in the evenings, and also just like lack of, I think where I was running on adrenaline, I had no appetite. But yeah, 100%, I had an eating disorder. I was controlling what I was eating. I was, I didn't really eat very much, and I just kind of always ran on empty. And I think a lot of that came from, I knew my role in the band was more about image and who I was dating and my hairstyle and what I was wearing, more so than my vocals, say. So I kind of took that on, and I think I took that and ran with it. And my life was so out of control for myself. It was controlled by so many other people that I think by controlling my food was the only way to kind of feel a sense of control over my life.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because it is the only thing, when you're in that and you feel like you're in this tumble dryer, it's the only thing that you can hang on to. It's like, well, I'm spinning, but then this is something that I decide I choose to do, even though it's the worst thing that you can do to yourself. It's ownership of it. It's a really weird one. It's like it's fucked up, really, you know, the way that the mind works during those periods. But it does give you a sense of comfort when you're, you know, so out of control.
Yeah, it's weird. You feel like a sense of accomplishment. Like I remember going to bed and feeling hungry and thinking, well done. Or someone saying to me, oh, Frank, you've got a bit skinny, like you look a bit unwell. And to me, that was kind of like a pat on the back. And then it would just spur me on to eat less. And but I didn't really realize that until I got pregnant and got a proper appetite. And it's really strange.
Did your like history with mental health and obviously your an eating disorder worry you when you were pregnant? Because obviously, you know, we hear so much about postnatal depression and, you know, it being a real pressure on mums in particular. Did it worry you going into parenthood?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, like, they do say that if you already suffer from depression or anxiety, then you are more likely to have postnatal depression. So I had spoken to my therapist at the time. I was still seeing him really regularly and said, you know, we're trying for a baby and blah, blah, blah. And we'd kind of had the discussion already about me staying on my antidepressants. And I couldn't stay on my anxiety medication, but I could stay on my antidepressants. And that's something that is quite controversial, which is why I always talk about it. And I've written about it in my book, because I get so many women message me worrying about, I want to have a baby, but I'm scared to come off my tablets. And as long as you sit down with your GP, and, you know, not all of the medication can be taken during pregnancy, you know, not all are safe, so you have to check that. But for me, it was my doctor just kind of said to me, he was like, look, you either stay on your medication and you're able to be there for your baby when it comes out, or you come off them and you highly risk the chance of having another breakdown and ending up in hospital and not being able to be there for your newborn baby. So for me, it was a no-brainer, to be honest.
Did you speak about this publicly at the time, or is it only, you know, recently that you've kind of thought, well, actually, I'm going to talk about this because more people need to know about it?
Yeah, no, I didn't talk about it at the time at all. I think there's always been quite a stigma around medication anyway, and then especially when you're pregnant, and not enough people really know the ins and outs of it. And neither did I. It was only because, and there will still be GPs that will probably say, no, you have to come off then. But because my guy was a psychiatrist, obviously that's what he specializes in, and actually he stayed in touch with my obstetrician, and they kind of kept an eye on me together, which was good.
And so what were the early days like for you? You know, I think have you got a good, you know, family unit around you, like lots of support, and was everyone looking out for you?
We have Wayne's mum and dad who have kind of pretty much always really helped us with the kids, and she was amazing. You know, if I was really tired, she'd take the baby for me and help us in the night, and that, so we were really lucky with that. And I think I was 24 I think when I had Parker, or 25, so I was really young, and I was used to, I know it sounds silly, but I was used to being really busy, and I was used to just running on empty and being tired. Whereas Wayne was still playing football and training, and he cannot. He needs his 8 hours sleep. So we very quickly got into a routine of I did the nights, and then he would, because he had to get up for training, he would get up extra early, do the morning so I could have a lay-in, and then he'd go to training. So yeah, I mean, my sister's just had twins, and I just think,
We saw that. It's brilliant.
How you do it. It's mad. But then I think that first stage, and Parker, my first, he had colic, and he ended up having like an allergy to the protein in cow's milk. So he was constipated all the time, and he was a cryy baby that hardly slept. And so yeah, he was hard work, bless him.
And how did you find the changes in your body during those early stages? And what was it like after you've had the baby and you're kind of left with your post-birth baby? What was that like for you?
I'd say that was one of my biggest issues. I put on 4 stone with Parker, and At the time I was on a combination of 2 antidepressants, one of which I'd got put on when I'd lost a lot of weight and went into hospital. And it turned out that this particular medication, I found out a few years later, really holds on to water. Right. So when I got pregnant with Parker, I literally gained water like no tomorrow. By the time I was 3 months, I had no ankles. I was literally, and then I just kept gaining and gaining weight. And for me, that was... it was horrible because it was the first time I'd ever gained weight, and being so out of control. And 2, I was still very much in the public eye, and I was performing next to the girls who were all still like a size 8, a size 6. I was dancing on stage, and I felt really embarrassed to be there, and I felt like people were disgusted by me to watch me. And it was weird. Like, it's supposed to be like the happiest time, and it was, but I didn't like how it made me feel. So for me, pregnancy is more a means to an end, you know, like I get the gorgeous baby at the end, but I don't really enjoy the process in between. And then afterwards, I lost the weight really quickly, if I'm honest. Like, I didn't bounce back, obviously. You don't bounce back from 4 stone. But I, you know, I did everything properly. I only trained like 3 days a week. I ate healthily. I didn't starve myself for the first time ever. You know, I was eating protein, and I had like a plan with my trainer at the time. And that's when we kind of discovered that this medication I was on helped made you gain weight and water retention, and the minute I came off it, the weight just kind of fell off.
Wow. Did you feel pressured to lose the weight?
Yeah, 100%. But I think more so for me, just because I wanted to feel like me again, which now further down the line I feel is a silly way to look at things, because you're never going to be the you were before, whether or not you get back to a size whatever and the same weight, you're not the same. And I think that's something we need to learn not to aim for.
Yes.
But yeah, at the time, I did feel that pressure. And I can still see, I think I put a picture on Instagram. It's one of our performances. And I remember everyone being like, oh, you look amazing. And, da, da, da. And it was the first time that I felt comfortable in what I was wearing and kind of felt back to my old self.
We'll be right back after the short break.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we?
It's really interesting that that whole conversation around, you know, I think the biggest learning that we go through as mothers is to accept ourselves for the person we are today in this moment, right this second. It's not about our dress size, how much we weigh on the scales or anything like that. It's more about the ultimate acceptance of who we are as people and how we feel inside rather than how we look. And that is the holy grail, really, that ultimate thing of like not looking for or not wanting validation or needing validation from yourself on how you look in the mirror, but actually how you feel. And actually, I don't think I've completely found that yet. I'm still kind of searching for it. Some days I have good days and some days I have bad days.
But I think it's good that you can be honest and say that, because I think... I know, like, I find it hard and I try to be honest. You know, I've got stretch marks and I've got skin that's not as tight as it used to be, you know. So even if I lost loads of weight and toned everything up, I would still have that same skin. And that's something that I find really hard to accept.
Yeah.
And I see these other women who really own their new body and wear their stretch marks as a suit of armor, and it gave them what they wanted and it brought them their lovely child. And I envy those women, because I know I will never be one of those.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Completely. Yeah. Does that put you off having more children? And after your first, did it make you think about having a second?
Yeah. So when I had my second, I'm not a religious person, and for the first time, so I knew we were trying, and I fell quite quickly with Carter, my second, and the minute I found out I was pregnant, I just burst into tears and was like, I don't want to get fat again. And I was really terrified, and then I got hyperemesis and couldn't stop throwing up, and I lost half a stone very quickly. And I remember saying to Wayne, this is God punishing me for wanting to be pregnant, and then crying because I didn't want to get fat.
But it's completely natural to feel like that, and it's really amazing that you're saying that, because I do think, I mean, Georgia and I discuss this all the time, the women that really embrace their bodies during pregnancy and the ones that are like, yeah, this is happening, and take it day by day. And, you know, I think if you've ever suffered from any form of, you know, eating disorder, eating issues, that process of watching yourself grow bigger and bigger and bigger every single day, even though you know that you're growing your baby that you've always wanted, that you love unconditionally, it's still like you're fighting against it, and it's quite a hard one.
Yeah, it's weird. It is really weird. And then you see the women who, you know, like my sister was one of them, like from behind, you would never have known she was pregnant. And I've always been really jealous of those people, because I think, you know, especially having a hyperemesis where I couldn't stop throwing up, and I was supposed to be doing the Strictly tour and I had to pull out of that, and I couldn't then spend time with my toddler, and I felt guilty about that. And there was lots of things with my second that I found hard, completely differently to my first. And I just think, you know, it it would scare me now to have another one. I think one, because you're more likely to have hyperemesis, and I really don't want that again. No. And two, because I feel like it's been hard enough to get my body to a point where I feel semi-comfortable. And I feel like I always say to Wayne, oh, if we had a third, you'd have to ship me off to America and slice me up.
Oh no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. Oh, no. How do you feel about yourself now? Where are you in that process?
I think like nine times out of 10, I'd say like half the time I feel okay in clothes, but yeah. I feel like the minute I'm naked or in a bikini, to me is not a happy place. And I think when I was younger, I never understood this beach body concept. It wasn't really a thing when I was younger, to be honest. I would never like lead up to a holiday and think, oh God, I'm not ready to be in a bikini or anything yeah. like that. You know, it just, I was there, that was it. And now I do feel really self-conscious in a bikini, and I am, I feel like I'm very lucky top half, not so lucky bottom half. Like that's the part of me that I don't like. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say I do my best. I train a lot and I try to eat healthily. I've just found out that I have PCOS, so that doesn't really help wow. with weight gain and losing weight yeah. and things like that. Yeah. And it doesn't help with mood. So yeah, it's just one of those things. I feel like it's still just a continued battle, just a different version, I suppose.
Yeah. And how is your anxiety at the moment?
You know what? It's been really up and down. I kind of just feel like with Corona.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly. I think
the Corona coaster.
Yeah.
like, you know, one day I'm fine, the next day I'm crying. I just can't really call how I feel 9 times out of 10. Yeah. But anxiety-wise at the minute, not too bad. If you'd asked me a couple of weeks, I was on a real bad anxiety period. But it seems to have eased off. So it's just one of those things. It's just really up and down. But I just feel like now we've got something extra to add to it.
Yeah. No, I mean, totally. And when you have bad days, how do you handle the boys? Because I know I find it difficult. I don't suffer from anxiety. But if I'm in a bad mood, for instance, I find it difficult to parent on those days. And I find myself being a bit more snappy with the kids. And then I lay in bed that night and I feel so awful. I think, well, that wasn't their problem. That was my problem today. And I've taken it out on them. How do you handle those days?
Yeah, that's really hard. I hate that. For me, it's less when I'm anxious and more when I'm depressed. So if I have a day where I'm feeling like I can't really cope and I just want to spend the day in bed and yeah. I don't really yeah. want to talk and be people-y, I do find that hard with my kids. In a way, they help me because I have to get up and I have to look after them, obviously. But also then, you know, with depression comes a lot of guilt anyway, and then add on yeah. mum guilt. And, you know, I do go to bed and I do feel awful because I think, oh, I haven't been the best mum today or the last few days, or I haven't given them the time they deserve, or like you, like I have been snappy and stuff. And that's is really difficult. And I hate that part of it because I always feel like I've let them down, or they'd be best if they had a mum that didn't have depression or anxiety. But then also, on a good day, I remember that I do my best. I love them a ridiculous amount. I remind them of that all the time. Yeah. And they're happy. So that's all I want out of life, is for them to be happy. So, you know, we can't all be 100% all of the time, whether you have depression or anxiety or not. We all have other factors that go into that. So also, I think for me, the way I deal with it now, I'm very lucky. Wayne's retired. He's around a lot. Yeah. And a lot of the time I don't even really have to ask him to step up. He just does. He'll like take the kids out to the park and give me some time away, or he'll keep them entertained so that I can just enjoy being in my hole and just get on with it, really.
How much do you share with the boys? Have you ever kind of told them about your illness, and do you cry in front of them? And how much do you share on that level with them?
I don't think I've cried in front of them. I wouldn't say that that's like a conscious, oh, I can't cry in front of him, but I kind of normally tend to do that on my own anyway. I haven't really properly explained it to them. Sometimes I just say, oh, mummy doesn't feel very well today. Yeah. And they just kind of accept it. If I'm in bed, they kind of leave me to it. They'll come and see me every so often. They're quite like, you know, like I have days sometimes, one of them will just keep coming in and be like, love you, mummy, and give me a little cuddle. And then they kind of disappear and go and do whatever it is they want. So I think they're aware that sometimes I'm not very well, but I think when they're a bit older, I can properly explain it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your podcast, Open Mind, is helping so many people open up that discussion. Is it helping you?
Thank you. Yes, definitely. I think I always say to people, like when I wrote my book and I met people and they're like, have said it helps them. I'm like, you know, it's not completely selfless. Like it completely helps me too. I spent lots of years kind of hiding this part of me and pretending to be things that I wasn't. And now I can share those things. And, you know, depression and anxiety makes you feel lonely. And for me to be able to put it out there and have people say the same and how they relate and stuff makes me feel less alone as well. So it kind of works both ways.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, you don't really discuss it with the boys now, but is it something, you know, as they grow up, you want to discuss so that they are aware, you know, they might not suffer from it themselves, but just so that they're aware that other people suffer from it and kind of how to deal with it and that kind of thing?
100%. Like I try and talk to them about their feelings as much as possible. Like my eldest is quite anxious. He's got this thing about death at the minute. Gets really upset about that. I don't know where that's come from.
Mine's the same as that. That's really?
Yeah.
Since he started school, he talks about death all the time. It's really strange. Yeah, it's really strange. I was worried about it. I was thinking, what? Where has this come from? Have I said something? But obviously, it's not. It's just, it must just be a normal
I suppose
thing.
You've got to learn about it at some point, I suppose. But again, being a non-religious person, I feel bad because I don't have like a great answer to that, and it's actually something that really feeds into my anxiety issues, so I find that one quite hard to deal with. So he's quite an anxious kid. He's a real deep thinker. My other son is a bit more like Wayne, like no fucks given, mate, like as long as he's all right, he's all good, you know what I mean? But I'd rather him be like that. But I do talk to them at night. That's kind of my time. Like I'll ask them, I tend to, when we're in bed, I'll say, what made you happy today? Yeah. And did anything make you sad today? Or who was really kind to you today? Was anyone unkind? And generally they're like, no things made me sad, or everyone was kind today or whatever. But that's when I find they open up, because you know, like, you know, from when you were young, oh, what did you do at school today? I don't remember. What did you have for lunch? Don't remember.
Yeah.
Now I feel awful for
doing that.
Don't know.
No one.
And you're like, no friends.
Yeah, that's the worst.
So I find, at nighttime, just asking him those simple questions, like not getting deep and into it too much, just makes them aware of how they've been feeling and what they've liked and not liked in a day, just to make them kind of like aware of those things, I suppose. Yeah. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but
no, do you know what?
Sounds like it to me.
me and my middle daughter Luna, because she's the one, she sounds like your eldest. She's the one that's the kind of the deep thinker, is like highly emotional. She's the one that I worry about a little bit, because she can go from being absolutely fine to like the whole world being over. And she's also emotionally like really heightened, like she can really get into the heart of you, and she's like 4. But she's also a real worrier. And so I got her these worry dolls. So at night, before she goes to sleep, we talk, we've got 6 of them, and we go through everything that she's worried about, and we put them underneath her pillow, and she sleeps with them under her pillow, and it's helped her so much. Like 6 months ago, she wasn't sleeping through the night. She was screaming and anxious and spiders and the dark, and she said she couldn't breathe, too hot. I mean, everything. I was like, you can't be worried about everything. But it was interesting once we opened up the discussion, even at 4, she really, really, really understood it.
So how does that work? So then with each doll, she tells you what her worry is?
And then we put it under her pillow. We give it a kiss. We say, she's like, I'm worried about spiders. And then we kiss. They're from, they're South American. But you can buy them on Amazon. Okay. Everything on Amazon. And then I just put them under her pillow, and then she sleeps with 6 of them under her pillow, and it really has helped her.
I'll have to look at that then. I'm always trying to think of ways to...
No, that's good. We've got a book called Ruby's Worry. Mm-hmm. And it basically, the moral of the story is, the way to get rid of a worry is to talk about it.
Nice.
But yeah, it is nice because with Axel, he's very... he tries to say he's fine. He's always, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. But then, like you say, at night, when we lay in bed and I talk to him, that's when all these little things come out. I'm scared of this and I don't want this to happen and all that kind of stuff. And he only really opens up to me about those sorts of things. So I'm trying to get him to talk more. But it's difficult. It is difficult.
Yeah, we've got to keep talking it out. How does Wayne cope with your lows? And is he amazing? And are you good at communicating with him? How's that relationship?
You know what, we've been together nearly 10 years. Yeah. And I would say we've only really got better at communicating in the last like couple of years. And I had like my breakdown right early on, like within our first year of our relationship together, and he was amazing. You know, he could have run for the hills, but he didn't. He stuck around and he tried to learn as much as he could through my therapists and doctors and stuff at the time, but it was a real stress for him. And then it kind of happened. I came out, I carried on with work, he carried on with work, and then life just moved on and we never really discussed it as such. Not that it was like a hush-hush subject, but I guess we just, I don't know, we just moved on from it. And it's only really over the last few years, and I think it's as I've got older, I understand myself more, and I know what I need from someone now in that situation, and I know how to ask for it. Basically, I don't want him to fix it. No one can fix normally, 9 times out of 10, what I'm anxious about or what I'm depressed about. I just am. Yeah. So I'm not looking for answers from him. I just want him to either listen or to give me a hug or to go and take the kids and, you know, sort them out so that I don't have to. And now all I have to do is either cry, and he knows I just need to cry and get it out, or two, I just say, look, I'm feeling really rubbish today. And he just kind of does it. But I think he's had to learn not to take it personally.
Yeah.
You know, it's not him that's making me unhappy, me unhappy. It's not our relationship that's making me unhappy. It's just my depression and that's it. And I feel for him because that must be really hard, because I know if he's even having like a bit of a rubbish day or something, you can't help but take it personally.
I'm exactly the same. We always like to ask our guests, what is the best piece of advice they've ever been given as a parent, or what piece of advice would they give to, you know, say for instance your sister's just had twins, what advice did you give her?
I don't know, there's loads. I think the main one, which I think is something that parents find the hardest, and I think it takes real practice, is to make the time and to not feel guilty about looking after yourself, whether that's mentally or physically. And I think that's something we all find really hard. But you have to remember that in order to be the perfect parent or the good parent that you really want to be, you need to be in a good place.
Exactly.
And you need to be healthy. Yeah. So that's something that I've had to learn. And I think that's what a lot of people find hard. You know, we live in a world where everything, well, not at the moment, but everything moves 100 miles an hour. We think we have to be 100% at everything all at once. And that's just not realistic.
Yeah.
So I think, you have to look after yourself and your relationship. And sometimes those things have to come first.
Exactly. And also, you know, you're a role model to your children. So you want them to grow up looking after themselves, looking after their relationship, all of that kind of stuff. And I guess we have to lead the way, don't we, as parents? If we're ignoring our feelings and ignoring what we want in life, then it's not good for our children to grow up learning that.
And also, it's okay for us to step down as like lead figure for a moment and just be us. Because I think, you know, when we do become parents, it's literally everything, isn't it? We're like chucking shit at a wall left, right and centre, hoping that it all sticks. But sometimes, you know what, it doesn't. And that's fine as well. And I mean, even just popping out and doing like a 20-minute walk for you, you need to do that solo. Don't have to be with them all the time.
Exactly. And I think that's what everyone's found the hardest in lockdown is, you know, like I've had those moments, my friends have had those moments where they're like, I just can't bear to be around them or my husband or whatever, like any longer.
Yeah.
Or it's awful. And I'm like, but when would you ever spend this much time solidly together with any of them? You just wouldn't.
It's not normal. It's really not normal.
You know, you normally have something to do, whatever it is. So yeah, I just think it's really important. And I think like relationships as well, like, you know, as a couple, sometimes you have to take that time out, whether it's going out for dinner, going to the cinema, or just, I don't know, whatever that is, whether it's watching a Netflix thing together, just making sure you make that time is really, really important.
I love that. Can we ask you your five favourite products?
Okay.
Parenting products. So any products that you have in the house that you love.
Okay, well, even before all this COVID stuff, hand sanitizer was a big thing for me.
Yes.
When everyone was trying to fight to buy hand sanitizer, I was like, look, see, everyone laughed at my obsession, but I am fine staying pretty at home with my cupboard full of hand sanitizer.
Are you joking? Do you have a cupboard full of it?
No, not a cupboard. Well, I've got
That's
a few.
Amazing.
I had enough. I didn't stockpile or anything, but I had enough to get me through. I love it. I think it's great. Kids touch everything. Like, I'm a bit of, I don't care about kids playing in mud and things like that. Not in that way, but germs do stress me out. So like soft play to me is just like, my kids get ill every time they go to soft play, I swear. So like hand sanitizer or like wipes or something was always a big thing for me when they were little. And the smell kind of reminds me of them when they were newborns. Controversially, iPads.
Yeah,
I couldn't live without them. My kids love them. I love them when I need them to. They're great.
We're the same.
The Calm app.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's so good. You know, just sometimes when they get in bed, I can have read them a story and they're still bouncing off the walls and I'm like, they're never going to go to sleep. I just put a sleep story on the Calm app. This isn't an ad, by the way. I put a sleep story on and they literally are off within 10, 15 minutes,
That's
they're mad. Asleep.
That's so, I've actually tried that and I have spoken about this before, but the Calm app makes my son angry.
It's so
weird because I thought exactly that. I was like, oh, sleep stories. I love them personally. Like if I can't sleep, I'll put one on.
Yeah, I do.
And I tried one with my son about a year ago and he got really cross with it. It was almost like it was making him sleepy. That was making him
pissing
cross.
Him off. Yeah.
Was it the one where Harry Styles was telling him a story? Hi, this is Harry Styles. I'm going to read you a bedtime story. All right, Hazza. Come on.
All right, Haz.
Yeah.
Kate Winslet's got one at the minute. It's really good. I think I like it more than the boys.
Oh, I might try that one.
To be fair, they fought it at the beginning because it made them sleepy.
Yeah, so then that's what happened with me.
Wow. But yeah, they've given into it now. They know now. The minute they hear it. I even had them doing the deep breaths last night.
Which I love.
Yeah, although I then thought my youngest was going to hyperventilate. I was like, you can stop now. You can breathe normally. Muslins. I couldn't think of things now that they're older, but I was just trying to think of things over the years. Muslins for me were a really big part of the boys. Yes, you need them for, you know, the puke and the swaddling and all that. But my kids, I always felt like, you know, because they've got sleeping bags now.
Yeah.
I never felt like they were like snuggly enough. So the Aiden and Anae at the time had like these little mini square ones. That they could like hold and like snuggle up to.
Oh, yeah.
And then as they got older, they loved the big ones and they loved playing with the label. But I didn't mind because obviously there's always muslins. So if they lose this, I was always worried about them having like a favorite bunny and me having to buy 100 of them in case one went missing. I could give them a muslin and they'd go asleep. Like,
wow. That,
like it just really chilled them out. And really, it wasn't until I got rid of their dummies that they both kind of went off them. But my youngest every so often will pick one up and Oh, it breaks my heart.
And sleep like, and sleep with
still
it.
A baby.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, yeah. My son Kit, he sleeps with three blankies, he calls them, but they're just three muslins from Aidan and Anise. That's exactly what he sleeps with every night.
Yeah,
exactly, every night.
So I've got drawers and drawers of them because they're so soft. But then it got specific, like some of the labels were bigger than others and I only liked the ones with the big labels.
Oh, God.
For that. But I didn't have to have specific things, you know. There was never, I always had loads of them. So I loved them. And then I loved the Stokey buggy. I don't even know if that's how you say it. Stokey.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Stokey or Stoke. Yeah, I know the brand you mean.
They're Swedish, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's like
I loved it because it was high up. They're a bit more like, they're a bit more popular now. But when I had the boys, they were quite new. And what I loved about it was the baby was always really high up. So I didn't feel like they were really close to the floor. I could always see them.
Yeah.
And when if I popped out for dinner or whatever, they were always at like table height. And as they got bigger, that just got even handier because of my OCD. I didn't have to put them in those dirty high chairs in a restaurant. I could just keep them in there.
Yes.
Keep them in the buggy and they were at the right height and sat up properly. So yeah,
love
I can think of anything else other than
iPads. No, they're now good. They're older. No, iPads do everything.
Yeah, they do.
Oh. Frankie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. You're a super star. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Oh, she is so lovely, isn't she?
She is. She really is. I think, you know what I love when people just tell us how it is, you know, that's what we want to know as parents. We want to know that those people are going through the same as us, feeling the same as us. And it's just so lovely when you just really feel like you've got the whole picture from somebody. And she's just so open about her mental health and how that impacts day-to-day family life, because there's so many people who will be in the same boat and going through the same thing.
What I really loved hearing as well was her relationship with Wayne and how supportive he's been and his understanding, his level of understanding of somebody that, you know, has suffered as much as she does, and it still very much rears its head, you know. So that level of like communication and support between the two of them, lovely little insight into their life. She's a thoroughly lovely person, and I really rate people in the public eye that are willing to go that deep with their problems, because you know what, it really normalizes what we all go through. You know, if you see somebody that's up there who's in a, you know, she was in a girl band for her whole life, she's been performing, and everyone looks at her and thinks she's got this perfect existence, but actually, you know, real battles there.
Yeah, everybody has their own stuff going on. And the more we talk about it, the less alone people will feel. And also, I think that just helps in general. You know, if you feel like you're not the only person going through it, I think it just lifts. It almost takes a weight off your shoulders, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Thank you, Frankie, for that. So, yes.
Yeah, come back on again soon, please. So, as always, we would love you to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. Please, if you could leave us a little review, a little written review, that would really be helpful as well. And of course, tell all of your mates about us. If you know that somebody's not listening to the podcast, ask them why not.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be loads of pregnancy announcements this month. So,
yes.
Yeah. Get them on board.
Well, the Christmas shagging.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's been stuck at home. And yes, please, if you've got any suggestions for guests, then please do drop us a DM at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's own channel at Zoe Harveman. And we'll be back on Friday.
We'll see you then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.